Welcome to QualityCast North, a podcast dedicated to showcasing healthcare quality improvement across northern British Columbia. Casting today from the traditional territories of the Kleklaytane and Tsintia and Pierce Nations are your hosts.
I'm Cher Chewy.
And I'm Lee Cameron.
You're listening to QualityCast North. Welcome back, listeners. Today, our subject is one which preoccupies the minds of many British Columbians each summer, and that's wildfires. Over recent years, due to climate change, British Columbia has seen an increase in the number and size of wildfires. Many occur in remote, forested regions away from towns and cities, but increasingly they threaten or encroach on settlements, posing a risk to property, businesses, and also sometimes healthcare facilities. When fed by strong, unpredictable winds and dry conditions, wildfires can spread quickly and evacuation orders can come at short notice. But how do you evacuate a hospital or a long-term care facility in a hurry? The urgency and complexity of this task sounds like a recipe for chaos and potential disaster. But for Health Emergency Management BC, it's their job. Joining us today to talk about their quality improvement work on healthcare facility wildfire evacuations are Gloria Hertz and John Coyne. Welcome, both of you. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Now, before we get into the subject of today's interview, I wonder if you can tell us a little bit about yourselves and how you ended up in the roles that you have now. What did your career journeys look like? Gloria, can we start with you?
Absolutely. Hello, Dr. Chewy. Thank you for having me and Lee.
So my name is Gloria Hertz, and my current role with HEMBC is I'm a manager in the Lower Mainland team. My current portfolio is doing business continuity management for Vancouver Coastal Health. But before that, I spent a number of years as the emergency management lead for the Vancouver Acute portfolio. So I was plugged in right at the hospital site level, supporting the leadership and the staff there and in their emergency management, preparedness, response, recovery. And a little bit about my background. So I actually come from nursing. I'm a registered nurse, proudly so. I was a clinically practicing nurse for just over 10 years, predominantly in the emergency department. And it was during that time that we actually participated in a Code Orange exercise. We had a big full-on simulation. And as I was participating, I thought, oh my gosh, this is so many of the things that I love about my day-to-day work, about anticipating and responding to critical situations. And that really is what sparked my interest in disaster and emergency management. Fast forward a couple years later, I did some additional schooling and made my way to HEMBC. And here we are now.
That's a great story. Yeah. And great to see that nursing background. And what about you, John?
Well, I am the Projects and Initiatives Specialist with the HEMBC North team. We are also part of the Provincial Health Services Authority, but my team, I'm one of six people on the team, and we're assigned to Northern Health as our number one client. And much like Gloria is doing down in the Lower Mainland, we're focusing on all phases of emergency management, right through planning, preparedness, response, and recovery, and supporting Northern Health in making sure that they can deliver essential and critical services clients, regardless of the insult or what's going on. My career journey has been a little atypical. I often like to say I started back in 1979 when I was 9 years old, but I was evacuated along with my family during the Mississauga train derailment in Toronto. And because we had a big family and not a lot of vehicles, I went with my aunt who went into labor. And I rode with her in an ambulance through two different hospital evacuations until she delivered in the front doors of a hospital at the east end of the city. So I sort of got the bug at a very young age through my own lived experience. My career journey has been 33 years. I'm dating myself. But I first started, I studied nursing and paramedics, and I was a flight and special operations and tactical paramedic for a number of years. And I've had the privilege of working throughout the world, in Europe and Canada, many provinces. And working in health emergency management now allows me to take a lot of that operational knowledge I gained and my own lived experience and bring it into my toolbox to support clinicians and healthcare providers and organizations in really maintaining continuity of healthcare. Although emergencies do happen and they're stressful events, there are normal everyday business in health emergency management BC. So we bring that sense of organization and calm and continuity and collaboration to the table every day, the work we do. It's a privilege.
That's a great journey, actually. And it's interesting to see that spark from a very young age there, some actual real life experience in that setting. So I'm sure that did prompt your career in many ways. Okay, well, let's turn to the topic of wildfire evacuations from healthcare facilities. And I think let's turn the clock back to 2021, which is, I think, the inciting incident in many ways for this work. So what was the original problem that prompted you to start this improvement work? Can you tell us?
Yeah, absolutely. I can jump in here. So in August of 2021, we had truly an exceptional wildfire season. We've had some, significant wildfire activity in years previous, but it all culminated in the week of August 15th. There was a number of community level evacuation alerts and orders that were issued in the Interior Health region. And I believe 780 residents of long-term care, assisted living, and independent living facilities were evacuated during that single week. And I have to really acknowledge the work that Interior Health did in that space, because they were actually able to absorb the majority of these evacuees within their own region and within their own health system, which is just absolutely incredible. However, even they eventually reached their capacity in such a short amount of time. And so the situation arose where we had to evacuate, several hundred evacuees over the course of that week into the lower mainland. And this occurred through a couple different modes of transport. Primarily, we tried to move people by vehicle, large buses that, traveled hundreds of kilometers into the lower mainland. That was posed its own challenges, but in some ways was a little bit more straightforward. But an additional situation arose where we actually had to use air transport. And that added a series of complexities to the evacuation that really we had not rehearsed or experienced before, certainly most of us that were working at that time. So, the outcome of that situation really speaks to the level of excellence that exists in our clinicians and our staff in healthcare, their ability to adapt to the situation and meet the needs of their clients. However, in reviewing the incident, once the dust had sort of settled, we realized that this was an opportunity to leverage the learnings from that incident and to put into place processes and procedures that could make an evacuation like that smoother, more efficient, and more comfortable and safer for our patients. So that was really the motivating event. We actually, mapped out some components of this project right in the thick of those evacuations, because we weren't sure if we were going to be receiving any more. But then fortunately the wildfire activity seemed to decrease after that week, and we were left with a number of ideas and suggestions and recommendations. And so that really is where the project was born out of, this desire to improve evacuations in the future by developing a standardized provincial approach.
That's really interesting. And so can you tell us, perhaps you can tell us a little bit more about some of those specific learnings and maybe some of the gaps that you perceived and you picked up on after that that particularly tough wildfire season and what you really wanted to improve on.
It really was a culmination of a lot of systemic factors that produced some of our challenges. Our health system is not homogenous. And so, taken not only that we have different health authorities that we're trying to coordinate together to receive these evacuees, we were also receiving some evacuees from privately owned assisted living and independent living facilities. And so we had a lot of different groups with different internal processes collaborating together to move these individuals over. And that situation presented stressors to our processes that you wouldn't normally perceive in your day-to-day operations. So some of the examples are, we know that certainly in 2021, there was no legislation or process in place for identification around long-term care residents, because of course they live in their homes. They're not hospital patients, so they were not required to have any identifiers on them. That's a totally normal process and you know, at that time, but it caused real challenges when those evacuees arrived on the receiving end. We were not overly familiar with them, and so it took us quite a bit of time to match the names that we had of the people we were expecting with the individuals that had arrived. And of course, that was compounded by the patient population, which was largely elderly. And then, you know, you have some difficulty hearing, makes the process of identifying folks a little bit harder. And that really contributed to quite a bit of congestion at the point of reception at the airport. In the same kind of vein, we didn't have any processes outlined for how belongings and equipment would be labeled and transported, or even any criteria for what was considered essential to move with the resident. And so clinicians were doing amazing at the point of care, doing their best to pack up what they thought was needed and label it. But again, without a process, there were several gaps. We had a hard time matching belongings to the individual where labels had fallen off or were not completely filled out. We didn't know how many items were traveling with each individual. So you don't know when to stop looking. Something as simple as adding a counter on each label, 1 of 5, 2 of 5, you know, makes a huge difference. But that created some chaos at the reception site. And you know, a big risk to that as well was not only these belongings oftentimes have great emotional meaning or sentimental meaning to these residents, but some of it was mobility equipment or other specialized equipment that they require in their day-to-day. And it's absolutely critical that we can match those up with people immediately so as to prevent any injuries or falls down the line. For the most part, you know, with time, we were able to reconcile all the belongings to the individuals, but there was some items, some bagged items of clothes and personal keepsakes that we actually were never able to reconcile, and again, presented a great opportunity for improvement moving forward. And then the last thing I'll touch on as an example was amplified by the fact that we were dealing with different health authorities and different systems, is that handover was a real challenge. So we didn't have a process mapped out for how patient information would be handed over from sender to receiver, potentially through staging areas throughout the evacuation. And a number of staff traveled with the residents from the sending site to the receiving site. But that was very taxing on them to be the sole points of contact at the receiving site to help us identify who folks were and what their medical needs were. And so we realized there was a need for better handover, so that in the event that an individual required additional care at any point in the evacuation or at a staging site, there was some key information we needed to know about them so that they could receive that care quickly and avoid any adverse outcomes. So information like, you know, if they're diabetic or special dietary requirements, or if they have a history of certain key medical conditions, we need to have that information on hand so that, you know, if there is any change in their condition, we can act appropriately. And we really didn't have a process lined up for that. And so we ended up relying very heavily on staff that had traveled with the residents. But of course was identified as a big opportunity for improvement moving forward.
Those are really good examples. Thank you. And you can certainly understand the inherent risks that come with some of those and the potential for people to fall through the gaps there. So thank you for sharing that.
So, you know, leveraging these learnings, of which there were many, and looking to improve on several processes, you outlined the need to build what you describe as an intra and interprofessional transfer toolkit. I'm curious, how did you go about building this toolkit? Because after all, you don't know what you don't know.
Oh my gosh, Lee, that is, it's a great question and certainly speaks to our mindset at the beginning. There was so much that we didn't know. And one thing that really lent itself well in our favor is something that is a standard part of our HEMBC process, which is the after-action review. This is something that we conduct after every major emergency. In fact, even after minor emergencies, right down to the site level, it's a standard process where we debrief participants that were involved, we interview, we really try to tease out from that lived experience where those opportunities for improvement are. And as you can imagine, the after action review process for the 2021 wildfire season was very extensive because it captured the learnings and the feedback from multiple health authorities, multiple regions, all different levels of healthcare contributed really to their learnings from that experience. So we were quite fortunate that that work was being led by HEMBC, and it produced a number of really excellent learnings and some very specific and targeted direction for where improvements could be made. So that ended up being a key input into developing the project plan and the process for all this. The other was an internal exercise that we did actually during the evacuations, during that week of August 15th, when we weren't sure if we were going to receive more evacuees. And I have to recognize my co-lead in this project, Nicole Spence, also from HEMBC, who led that particular exercise. But it was essentially a journey mapping exercise of the entire evacuation, where we really walked through step by step what was going to be happening at every point. What was the patient going to be experiencing at that point? What work would the clinician need to do at that point? And then asked ourselves the follow-up question, what kind of a tool or resource would be helpful at that point? So taken together, that internal exercise of walking through where we can find tools and resources to support the process, as well as the after-action review, they really created the foundation of the work. And we also realized there was the third great input was subject matter experts. So there are some really excellent and knowledgeable folks all over the province that have done this a number of times. And so HEMBC is really fortunate. We are connected in through a pretty wide network across the province that we can pull on these subject matter experts as needed. So then the next step, once we kind of had our sort of quote unquote marching orders, our plan of what we wanted to achieve, was to bring together the right people. So we brought in a working group of HEMBC representatives from across the province, each of them tasked with being the inroad into that health authority and its expertise and its processes. And we really came together and developed a lot of the work in a fairly quick timeline. And then we conducted sort of workshop engagement sessions provincially with a number of key subject matter experts and people that had been involved in the response. And that provided a great opportunity for, the end users of these tools and processes to give us real-time feedback. This is good. This is too long. I need more of this. I need less of that. And so that was, an additional layer of input before we, released the first version of the toolkit, which was back in June of 2022.
That's incredible. What an intensive process. And it really highlights that the components of engagement and making sure you've got all those players at the table right through to the, did you call it the front end? Or like right through, it's great. But back to the toolkit itself for a minute, what components make up the toolkit? So I'm thinking presumably different parts of it are more relevant to different parties within the process. Would you like to speak to that?
Yeah, sure can. And maybe I'll give a few words, and then I'll pass it over to John as well to add some comments. But in As I say, the journey mapping exercise was really useful because it allowed us to identify where the needs were at the various phases of an evacuation. And so the toolkit is broken up to match those phases. We have activation, coordination, evacuation preparedness, transportation, reception preparedness, and then we have a specific component for around supporting staff. So it's broken up kind of according to the needs within each phase, and it's a mix of tools and documents. So some of them are more policy oriented, are more procedural, and are useful for folks to review ahead of time. You know, can answer questions for them, like what are the roles and responsibilities of different agencies, of the sending health authority, of the receiving health authority. So those are there to really build a baseline of understanding for everybody, but you know, are not likely to necessarily be pulled upon in the heat of the moment during an evacuation. Write down, there's other tools though, which are checklists, and that can actually be filled out at the point of care and guide a clinician through all the critical equipment and belongings that need to be packed for an individual, including their medications and their mobility aids, sustenance to travel with them, provides a cue to ensure that they have an identifier on them and their belongings. And it, you know, provides an opportunity to do a little bit of a handover document that travels along with them. So, you know, the toolkit encompasses an evacuation, I should say, requires people at all levels of the health system to get involved in various capacities. And so the toolkit tries to mirror that and provide a resource regardless of where you're at in the response to meet your need. And maybe, John, I'll throw it over to you if you have anything more to add there.
No, that's an excellent summary, Gloria. Thank you. Dr. Chui, it's one of the most amazing things about the toolkit is, as it was being developed, and I wasn't part of the original development team, I came in after the fact, but as it was first being developed, not only did they have these terrific opportunities to clarify information, steps, and solve some of the challenges they'd experienced, they were all also put into a position to leverage some of the great work that's already been done in the province of BC. So the toolkit follows the BC Emergency Management System of Incident Command System. So knowing that sites, organizations, local governments, response organizations will be activated in EOCs, leveraging the Incident Command System theory, the toolkit fits very well into that. So we've created job action sheets, as Gloria mentioned, for different roles that intuitively fit within that incident command system. Where I think that's really excellent to highlight is, as in Northern Health, I'm one of the team of Mary, Trisha, Owen, Andrew, Heather, Megan, and myself, where we've had the opportunity to deliver this training to our frontline sites and care providers. It's a next step intuitively in the training already provided around incident command system and EOC operations and incident command posts. So yes, this is how you would respond to an external threat or emergency. And now here's a toolkit that will enable you to satisfy this need, regardless of the hazard that's causing the evacuation, because it's an all hazards approach. So whether you're dealing with a wildfire, flooding, or a critical failure in a facility, we know historically, globally in healthcare, when you're doing what we call a tactical, with little warning, evacuation of healthcare clients, you open up the door to a high mortality rate. You can have complex patients in intensive care environments, emergency environments. And then, of course, there's clients that normally could be quite independent. As Gloria mentioned, a long-term care type client who does very well in their home setting they're familiar with. But now that you're going to expose them to a higher emotional state with a lot of energy and activity going on, remove them from the facility that they're used to. What about the client who, as an example, suffers from Parkinson's and has very time-sensitive medication needs for the levodopa carbidopa? They're going to have anxiety about relocating. So one great thing that this toolkit does, which I'm most proud of when I present it, we have the checklist and the flow charts and the job action sheets and the policies and the procedures and the guides, but we also have a flow chart from the client's perspective. What does the patient experience? So at this phase of preparation, the client is going to be exposed to increased anxiety, increased energy, preparations. It's important to communicate what's going on, inform their caregivers and loved ones, their next of kin, tell them that you have things in hand, identify transport strategies, stuff they're going to bring with them. And it's not just the medication or the necessary piece of equipment, but it could be the client that has that one personal item that is very, very important to their overall well-being. And that's the great thing about this, is it brings that holistic client-centered care into that whole quality initiative to do an effective transport.
Yeah, and this, you know, thank you, John. This, and Gloria, this really pings into the next question, which you've answered many parts of, and it's like back to that, the perspective of the patient and the community, and then again, back into the perspective of the user. So you've spoken about this a bit, but I wonder if you want to add anything to it. How do you prepare potential users of the toolkit from a training perspective? So was there anything you wanted to add there on what you've already shared?
Yes, I can add a little bit of context for the listeners. We identified early on that this toolkit is only as good as it is usable. So that requires training and education for the users. It also required trying to keep the language as plain as possible and sort of embedding knowledge translation where possible into the toolkit, because there will be circumstances where you might need to use it and you have not received the training. So trying to eliminate jargon as much as possible and create different versions of the reference guide and different formats that can help explain who uses it and when. That was one of our deliverables in trying to make it as user-friendly as possible. And nonetheless, of course, the best case scenario is that we actually have time to go in and train people, do an intensive hour and a half session is in person is kind of the gold standard. Of course, that can be done virtually as well. There's all kinds of different ways you can do the education. If we can get in person and pull out the tools and print them and get folks to fill them in, you know, that's kind of the gold standard. And then beyond that, it can be done virtually as well. So we started building out the education right from the beginning to really align with the phases of how the toolkit is organized. So the full training takes about an hour and a half and would encompass all of the phases from start to finish and would cover the majority of the items that are part of the toolkit. The last thing that we're working on right now, actually, is taking the education materials and transferring them onto a asynchronous learning platform so that individuals can access it without the need of a facilitator. And this just increases really the scope and the span of the materials to be delivered. So we're working on a learning hub course, which would be accessible to anyone working in the healthcare system within British Columbia. And again, I want to emphasize that our preference and the gold standard is always going to be that facilitated education, taking the time to really pull things out and use them. But we want to be realistic about capacity and situations that might arise, hence the need to develop these different modalities of education delivery.
Thank you. I love that. I love the way you designed it. I love the way it integrates with the standard emergency operations center policy and execution, and you've thought of everything in terms of the training with pre-training and also this just-in-time education piece as well. So I love all that work, but of course the proof of the pudding is in the eating, isn't it? And so you can plan all you like, but when it comes down to it, how does it actually perform in real life? And it turned out you actually had an opportunity, didn't you, to test this toolkit out for real in 2023. And so you got a chance to really put it through the ringer, as it were. And I wonder if you can talk us through the events of 2023, who is involved and from where to where did transfer occur and how many patients and sites were we talking?
So we've been able to use the toolkit throughout a variety of different responses over the course of the last few years, different scales and sizes of responses, and some have required certain elements of the toolkit and others different ones. But 2023 marks a really interesting milestone in the lifespan of the project because we experienced the evacuation of the Northwest Territories into the Lower Mainland. So in Yellowknife and the majority of Northwest Territories, they had already been under severe evacuation alerts and orders due to wildfire. And facilities had already evacuated from more rural areas into Yellowknife, into Stanton Territorial Hospital. So a number of the individuals that were being relocated had actually already been relocated once or twice before. And now Yellowknife itself was being threatened. And we had to now look beyond just intra and inter health authority relocation. We were actually now looking at interprovincial relocation. And the majority of, again, due to proximity, the majority of evacuees from Stanton Territorial ended up being able to be received by Alberta, who had already received a number of evacuees over the course of that summer from other regions. But similar to 2021, at a certain point, we all reach our capacity. And so even though it was a little bit further distance away, we started to receive inquiries about whether British Columbia and the Lower Mainland would be able to receive evacuees from Stanton Territorial Hospital. And so that was a really interesting evacuation because it had a number of different jurisdictional elements to it that we were not used to working between provinces. And it tested the toolkit in a very real way. It just goes to show how you can plan for one scenario. And as soon as you're done planning for that scenario, a new one comes out. So we had planned for within BC, and then of course we're now tested from another province. But they were, I have to, you know, really recognize the team in the Northwest Territories. They were absolutely incredible. So we established contact with them early on, as early as possible, once it became reasonable to expect that an evacuation would occur. We shared the toolkit in its entirety with them. And again, I think that speaks to the work that was put in making the toolkit as self-explanatory as possible, because, of course, they were seeing it for literally the first time and had never even heard of it when it came across their desks. And we worked quite closely with the representatives from Northwest Territories to identify, okay, this toolkit of 21 different resources, which are the ones we really want you guys to pay attention to and utilize. And so we were able to have those conversations with them around utilizing our sending site list to give us the information we needed about incoming evacuees, about following the identification guide to ensure we could, you know, mitigate any challenges at the receiving end. And then on the receiving end here, we enacted a lot of the work that we had put in around reception preparedness. So ensuring that there was a stop check or a staging area right at the point of receival to reevaluate the condition of the evacuees and make sure that they were targeted to the appropriate area for care. Ensuring we had all the equipment and the right complement of staff at the receiving area to facilitate that movement. So we established a staging area at YVR Airport. It was a collaborative effort between all three lower mainland health authorities, Fraser, Vancouver Coastal, and Providence. And I believe in the end, it was about 45 evacuees that arrived from Stanton Territorial Hospital. It was a mix of individuals that were from their acute care setting and as well from their long-term care setting. So they all had different medical needs. And we reassessed everybody at the point of reception and then working with our private transport partner, SNT, and of course, EHS was there as well. We were able to send them to the appropriate receiving facility. These folks ended up being spread out across 13 different facilities in the Lower Mainland. And in doing that, so that they would be at a facility that was appropriate for their needs, and so as not to add any undue burden on any one part of the health system here in the Lower Mainland. So yeah, that was quite an exceptional circumstance doing an interprovincial evacuation, but we were really pleased to see that some of these processes we had put in place were effective at managing some of those complications that arise with, especially with air travel and with multi-jurisdictional evacuations.
Yeah, that's awesome. And it did sound like your toolkit really stood up well to those challenges in 2023, which was really good to hear. And I got to ask the question, did all the patients make it back to their homes safely in both those evacuations?
They did. So yeah, the folks that we received from the Northwest Territories, as I mentioned, some of them were actually acute care patients. And so they stayed in our system through to the end of their need to be in an acute care center. So some of them were actually discharged into the community. As you can imagine, the climate and the stressor of what had been going on in the Northwest Territories had really placed significant operational demands on the healthcare system over there. So some of them, upon entering the reception area here, were able to get some tests done that they had been waiting for and were able to move through the health system a little bit quicker, which was fantastic once the stressor of evacuations is behind you. And then in September of that year, so I want to say approximately 4 to 5 weeks later, we began our repatriation planning. So the group really came back together to say, okay, you know, we had been keeping an eye on where everybody was throughout the time of their stay in the Lower Mainland and had continued to track and ensure we knew that they were in good hands and where they were. Not only for our benefit, but also for any inquiries from families and that sort of thing. So we came back together in September and, you know, reviewed where everybody was at that present time and then began to work with EHS and with various partners around what repatriation would look like back to Yellowknife. And then, of course, even beyond that to their home regions. So it was a very good experience. You know, that was a big learning as well from that particular wildfire event. I think we were fortunate to have more success in our processes during the actual reception, that we had the capacity to really focus on repatriation and identify opportunities for improvement there. So the toolkit continues to evolve with those learnings as we go through them. As we go through these evacuations, we just keep finding new opportunities to tease out a better experience for the patients, clients, residents, and staff.
Thank you. That is the essence of improvement. Is it's continuous improvement, always looking to get better and better. And it's great to see that that piece there.
This is an outstanding improvement project, clearly, and to see it tested in real life with such an amazing outcome. Thank you guys for sharing this with us. But looking back, you know, you've had some room now between that situation and where you're sitting now. How do you feel about the work, both during the process of building it and in the wake of seeing it being tested?
If I could add anything, and you know, opportunities like this, when you get to speak to people like you, Dr. Chewy and Lee, is there are moments where we stop and pause and reflect. So I have been reflecting a little bit since getting in touch with you. And you know, going through this project and seeing the outcome, it has really brought me back to something that I learned in my early days of nursing, a belief that I hold to be completely true in our healthcare system, which is that patient experience, patient safety, patient quality is inherently tied to and goes hand in hand with staff safety and staff satisfaction. I really remember this from my own clinical experience, is that the healthcare system is filled with staff that want to take care of people and want to give them really good care. And when we provide a pathway for them to do that, not only is the patient safe and has a better experience, but staff actually experience real satisfaction and meaning in their work. And in reflecting on that, I was reminded of the overwhelming feeling I had at the end of the 2023 evacuation. And this was, you know, at 5 in the morning when the last of the evacuees had been assessed and transported out to the receiving facility. It was just the staff that were left, staff that, like myself, had been working through the night, you know, offloading and assessing and moving people around. And I still remember the looks on their faces. I don't think I ever will forget the sense of pride that they felt. I could really tell that they were so satisfied with the work that they were able to put in that evening and the care that they were able to provide. So, yeah, that memory will stick with me for a long time and will continue to be a motivator for the work that goes into this and the passion for this project is that, you know, patient safety, patient experience, staff safety, staff satisfaction, you know, they go hand in hand. And I feel really, really privileged to be a part of a piece of work that can help facilitate that.
That's a wonderful answer. Thank you. That's giving me all the warm fuzzies there. That really is lovely to hear about that. And it truly is amazing work. It's such high quality work. I know for a fact you've actually won an award from through Health Quality BC for this work, and that's well deserved because it really is phenomenal with astonishing impact. It's been lovely. It's been interesting and insightful hearing about this amazing work and how it was put into action successfully. And I share with you that must be very, very rewarding. But unfortunately, we've reached the end of our interview today and I can hear the closing music, which means it's time to wrap things up. But we'll be posting links to some of the useful resources that you'll provide us on this topic for any interested listeners with our show notes on our website. And we'll, of course, be sending both of you, Gloria and John, each an exclusive and highly coveted Quality Cast coffee mug as a token of our thanks for coming on the show. But until next time, it's goodbye from us all here at Quality Cast North, Gloria Hertz, John Coyne, and your hosts. I'm Sher Chewy.
And I'm Lee Cameron.
If you enjoyed today's episode, check out our other episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you find your podcasts, and subscribe to our channel. We'd love to hear from you. If you have a question for us about healthcare quality improvement, email us at qualitycomms@northernhealth.ca, and your question could feature on a future episode. QualityCast North is sponsored by the Physician Quality Improvement Initiative, or PQI. PQI is a flagship program of the Specialist Services Committee, a collaboration between the Provincial Ministry of Health and the Doctors of BC, with representation for the provincial health authorities. This episode was co-produced by Dr. Sher Chewy and Lee Cameron, with technical support from Levi Giles and Matt Walker of Expression North. Original music by Daniel Chewy. Further information about today's guest is available in our show notes on our website at nhpqi.ca.